Today begins a new series entitled Beyond Faith, Exploring the Universal and Practical Laws of Spirituality. In the last several weeks, we have been discussing various stages of spirituality in the spiritual life. And we have been talking about how spirituality goes through different changes as we go through changes. Our perception of spirituality shifts, expands, contracts, depending upon where we are within ourselves. As we go toward the third millennium, I think the universal and practical laws of spirituality will be more deeply felt and more universally lived. That spirituality will no longer be seen as one of the dimensions of our life, but rather the most highly evolved form of daily life that we live, whereby every day of our lives becomes an expression, a conscious expression of our spirituality. Perhaps the universal laws can be helpful. Metaphysical laws, they're sometimes called. Laws by which perhaps every human being is called to live by. They're natural laws because we have forgotten them. We forgot them as soon as we were born, whether it was in the water or outside of it. Our first consciousness was a consciousness of unity with our mother. And we fell into separateness and duality. And our life became a series of multiplicities, of oppositions. And our whole life is a journey back to the wondrous unity where we began. What's wonderful about this good news is this is part of the game. You see, all of the natural world has no problem with the universal, natural, or metaphysical laws. They live them without question, without faith. It is programmed in the hardware of plants and animals to be who they are. Nature, the energies within nature, to be what it is. It has 100% integrity. But what it doesn't have, we surmise, is the choice, is the responsible choice of aligning itself with the universal energies of life, the totality. And so, ours is to come into the world blind and hopefully go out of this world awakened. And we've talked about the various stages that people, no matter where they might be living, various stages of perception or awakening. The first, of course, the literal stage we talked about. Thomas Hickey calls it the mythological. I'm using the word the literal stage. And that stage of spirituality we discussed already, whereby we take everything literally. that we cannot explain or that we can explain, be it in nightmares, dreams, fairy tales, myths, scripture, fables, legends, stories. We take it literally. As children. And like squirrels, we store it in our cheeks, the wisdom that we learn in that first stage. However, if we do not process it and digest it into deeper levels of meaning, we will remain stuck at the literal stage of spirituality. And that is also the stage of opposition, the stage of duality and multiplicity. Because if I take one story literally, I get into a lot of contradictory material. So there has to be a true, a false, a black, a white, a good, a bad. And I don't see the totality play, the drama that is my place in the cosmos. The second stage, that's usually around childhood. We get that, I wouldn't say indoctrination so much, but that's how we begin learning. And children, thank God their reasoning faculty is not in gear yet. Their discerning faculties are not in gear yet, so the imagination and intuition are so alive, and they love stories. It's funny how we have to become children again to really get it, but at a deeper level. And then around 10 or 11 or 12 years old, the reasoning faculties emerge in the spiritual sense, right? And we're calling that the doctrinal stage. And the doctrinal stage of spirituality is when we begin to have a concept of who our higher power or highest power is, and what things we cannot understand or comprehend, we put into the basket of belief. So someone who has learned a lot of the stories and fables, begins to have some notion of who God is, maybe perhaps who Jesus is, or who Buddha is, or who Abraham is, or who Sarah is, Rebecca, whoever, whatever spiritual, religious mythology we grow up in. We begin to have a concept. We begin to have a notion, an idea of who God is, of what bad and right is, and usually we get very, very exclusive, and there becomes the truth we are looking for. And then everything else is what false is. And anything that we cannot explain, we put in the realm of faith. And that's the second stage. Around 11 or 12 years old, that's developed, basically. Usually, we don't get out of that doctrinal stage. Because it takes too much energy and too much focus to go into the third stage of spirituality. The drag is usually so much of energy is outside. We get pulled into the world of work, into the world of family, to the world of strife and struggle, to the world of success and self-esteem. And what we end up doing is relying on a very immature stage of spirituality, because all our time has been spent in the external, externalizing everything. And we search for happiness and we search for joy, don't we? We search for this outside of ourselves. And so the original energy that we used, which was very easy for us when we were children, and perhaps even when we were 11 and 12, becomes more and more difficult as we're attempting to be ourselves, to be unique, to find our individuality, and many are called, but few are chosen, perhaps means that everyone here is potentially can move to the third and fourth stages of spirituality. I would like to change that to everyone is called, but few choose it. Rather than many are called, but few are chosen. Everyone is called, but few choose it. And what I'm talking about is the movement out of spiritual ignorance into spiritual awakening. And so the third
stage of spiritual development, moving out of the dogmatic, is the symbolic. The symbolic stage, where we read into what our experience is. When we are reading something, we want to know what the hidden text is about. We realize that a good example of this would be the poetry, for instance. One cannot just look at poetry and see it literally. One must understand it figuratively, metaphorically, symbolically, many layers of meaning. And in the scriptures, of course, both Jewish, Christian, Hindu scriptures, etc., are chock full of symbolic material. And only at a certain level of maturity can we begin to mine, can we begin to understand and unfold the richness and mystery of the universal laws. And of course, the final level is the experiential level of spirituality. And that is when no longer are we only hearing the fantasy or hearing the story or envisioning some kind of concept of who God is or symbolically reading into material, but we're actually living what we are reading. And we begin to experience the kingdom here on earth. We begin to usher in, if you will, we begin to usher in or letting God in the universe. God is sort of behind, the highest power is behind the veil, attempting to get in to the world, and can only come if we allow. That's our free choice we were given. That's the gift. Our hand cannot be forced. We must let in spirituality into our life and then let it also flow out into the world, and we begin to increase our awakening. We see differently. We see with the eyes of our soul, not only with our physical eyes. We see with the eyes of our soul, not only with the eyes of our mind. We see with the eyes of our soul, not only with the eyes of our heart. But we see with the original eyes of the that are the same eyes as the great I Am. Let's go to the universal laws and see if they make sense to you. And these laws are laws that are potentially lived, even though they are part of the very hardware of the universe. If we do not grasp them, we work against them and create a lot of pain for ourselves. A lot of suffering. Don't forget the lessons of Buddha, the three roots of suffering: attached craving, attached dislike or aversion, and three, spiritual ignorance. What the spiritual ignorance is about that causes so much suffering is the spiritual ignorance of the universal laws that were given a long time ago. And we forgot them. And they are laws that are understood by nature, unquestioned by the animal kingdom, but very, very confusing and bewildering to those of us, every one of us, who come into the world divided, separate, and in the blind. And so, the good news is all of us are on the path of trying to find out and delve into the mysteries of life to uncover what the universal laws are all about.
Now, the following universal laws that I have here are from a variety of places in the world religions, from a variety of conversations that I've had throughout the years, and also from experience. The first universal law: nature cannot tolerate a vacuum. If I let go of something, something else must take its place. I'm reminded as a child playing in the ocean and creating a depression in the sand. And as soon as the sea comes to the shore, the water fills up the hole. Nature cannot tolerate a vacuum. If I let go of something, something else will take its place. Now, hear this at the level at which it is useful to you. The wonderful thing about universal laws is there's not one meaning. There are a layer of meanings depending upon one's spiritual awakening. One that I like is that we must let go of our false belief that we deserve lack and limitation. And that is what is essential. We must let go of that. We must let go of the fact that we are constantly sabotaging ourselves from true joy. That we believe we are fundamentally a vacuum. That we are fundamentally an empty space, a hole, if you will, where we must have something filled. That we are essentially not whole is the great lie, is the great division, is the great multiplicity that we need to break. And the only way to look at that, of course, is to go to nature to see how nature operates. And how nature operates can tell us how spirituality operates. So nature cannot tolerate a vacuum. Whatever is let go, something else takes its place. A corollary of that is that wonderful statement by Jesus of Nazareth, who said, one must lose one's life in order to gain it. The corollary of that is, if I choose to let go of something that I'm possessing, more will be on my plate, more than I ever could imagine. So it's not about hurting myself. It's not about turning myself into a victim, letting someone else get the best of me. That's not what that rule is about. That rule that he who will lose his life for my sake will find it is about losing one's narrow perspective of things, narrow perspective of ideas or what the universe is all about. Letting go of that in a wider view takes its place. Or letting go of what I consider happiness to be. Letting go of that and something else, a deeper joy, will take its place. More will be put on my plate than I ever could have imagined if I let go of what I limitedly think my happiness is all about. So what I'm saying is if we hold on to something that we think that we know is going to give us our happiness or make us happy, nothing else can take its place. You see, an already full cup cannot be filled. So the trick in life is to be very good at making spiritual yard sales. Cleaning house. Really letting go and getting rid of baggage, of old stuff that is no longer useful. Now, I think, I really enjoy reading the face of humanity and seeing spiritual principles at work. All of these yard sales that are amazing, you know, on Saturday you can't go one block without seeing three yard sales. And really all, at the literal level, it's, hey, I think we see a yard sale. At the literal level, you see. At the conceptual level of seeing a yard sale, okay, the second level, the doctrinal level, is, well, I want this, but I don't want anything else at this yard sale that we're going to.
and I'm going to look for this thing that I need because we really need this thing. And what is it? I don't know. It's some Shotsky, but we need it, we want it, and we need to go buying because we have to fill that vacuum. That's the doctrinal stage. But of course, the symbolic stage is the stage I'm talking about now, that we see a yard sale and we go, oh, look at all these yard sales. What is all that about? Cleaning house. Cleaning house on the inside. Getting rid of things that we do not need. So that better things, more valuable things, more lasting things can take their place. So I would rather throw a yard sale, you see, than go to one. That's the trick. Just give it to the universe. And if we give it to the universe, what we think we need, we will get something far grander and far greater. See, that's what it's all about. If we give a little, we get a hundredfold. You see, these are metaphysical principles. It's also the principle of abundance rather than the principle of scarcity. The principle of scarcity says, oh my God, we got to get up at 7 because everybody's going to be at the yard sale by 9. I know it. And they're going to get all the good stuff. Right? And that's the principle of scarcity, you see. It's the principle of dividedness, of duality. It's the principle of spiritual ignorance. Because what it says is, there's not going to be enough. There's not going to be enough. Or the person that says, I sent out 1,000 resumes and still I have no job. There must be nothing there. Okay? See, on the other side to that, what the universe might be saying is, you're looking in the wrong place. You're trying to get a job in a particular area, and that's not what the universe wants for you right now. The universe wants something else from you right now, to give you something more than you could possibly imagine. And you're trying to send all these resumes to this one place, and it's not going to work because you're going against the universal principles. You're going against what is natural. You've already done that. You have to do something else. Okay? You may have to shift your attitude. You may have to shift some internality inside. You may have to spend some of that time meditating. You may have to spend some of the time you're sending resumes being with your children to find out about those universal principles you forgot. You may have to spend some time just walking in nature to see how it operates, to see how far you've come from yourself, how far you have veered from yourself. Okay? Two, what we put our focus on and attention on will grow more lively in our life. Be careful. See, it's a metaphysical principle. It's a universal principle. It will be, period. It will have its way. These are not negotiable. What I am talking about is the hardware of the universe, not the software of the universe. These are non-negotiable items. They are not about belief. They are about being. And being is powerful. And only a studier, a student of how being operates, will come to know and experience and become aware of these universal principles. So whatever I put my focus on and awareness on grows more lively in my life. So, all of you who may have had this passion for something, a process, a chemical, avoiding pain, food, gambling, sexuality, whatever it might be, whatever you put your attention on, the attention, the mental energy is so powerful. And whatever we put our mind on and focus on, it will grow more lively in our life. I remember the first time that I began sending money to Native American concerns. That's all I got in the mail. I was buried in requests for contributions to Native American funds. One has to be discriminatory here, see? Because what one puts one's attentions to will grow more lively in one's life, okay? If you have a concern, it's the mental energy that you're giving it. It's not only that you're on a computer. That's only at the literal level. That someone's put your name on a computer and now everyone is sending it to you. That's literal. Bottom line is that at the symbolic level, there's a lot of energy out there in the universe, and when I attract my energy to that, I will get that back. Just think of what would occur if I was attracted to wholeness, to totality, to compassion. Think of what would occur if I was attracted to true joy. Not to medicating my pain, true joy. What would occur in my life? What if I were attracted to healthy relationships? Healthy relationships would grow more lively in my life. If I were attracted to healthy jobs would be attracted to me. This is not about faith. This is beyond faith. This is about being. It is about looking, taking a look and seeing and using our perception for what we were meant to use our perception. And that is to realize ourselves and to become the very principle that gave us birth. And that's the principle of unconditional love in the world. Okay. The third universal principle, or metaphysical principle, natural principle. A corollary, perhaps. We get what we continually focus on, even if we don't want it. Ah, yes, fear, angers, resentments. Also, at the level of mind, they are energy forms. Anger is energy. Resentment is energy. Thought forms that snag the shirt of our progress. Why are we holding on to them? Well, Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, and Jesus knew. Why? Because they understood the universal principles and they lived them. Buddha knew that it was about attached aversion, attached dislike. We can be attached to what we hate. In fact, we are as attached to what we hate as we are attached to what we obsessively love. And that is why, through the process of releasement, Meister Eckhart knew that. That whole meditation, the Christian mystic of the 12th century, understood that by the process of releasement, to release the negative energy, right? And please, don't release it to anyone else. Don't play, boomerang with the universal principles. Okay? Because that can occur too, believe me. That's all about black magic. Dark magic. That's not a racial thing. Dark magic is about sending negative energy, okay, to places. Negative energy that we have to send. Whatever you do, send it into the universe. Mother Earth, Mother Earth knows how to do it. It transforms it. Why do I know that Mother Earth transforms negative energy? Any farmers here? Raise your hand as a farmer. Oh, my God. Ah, okay. Okay, ever step in fertilizer? All the time. That's smelly stuff, isn't it? Smells good? Yeah, I just said smelly stuff. Did I say it was bad smelly or good smelly? Of course, you never see me smile when I step in that stuff, I tell you. Yeah, fertilizer. And when fertilizer is what creates all of those things that we eat. Right? We need that fertilizer. We need that mulch even. Wonderful mulch. In flowers. I remember working with Father Bienvenu at Loyola University, working with Father Bienvenu to try to get a better grade in Greek so I would help him in his rose gardens. And all I got all I got was smelly mulch and thorns in my hands and Father Bienvenu looking at me one day and saying, Neil, one day you might be perfect, but you won't be happy. Thank you, Father Bienvenu. Trying to give me a lesson of the dangerous, impossible tunnel of approval seeking. Never works. But I couldn't quite get it. I just stood staring at the sky. I might be perfect, but I won't be happy. Father Bienvenu. Fertilizer is important because it transforms into good things. And so all that negative stuff or negative energy that we have is energy that needs to be used. And so we put it, we visualize it into the earth. And we let Mother Earth take care of that. We release. Okay? So that's how we get that universal corollary third principle that whatever I put my attention on, even if it's not good for me, will occur. We can work on releasing the negative into the universe, not onto a person. Maybe we have time for one more universal principle. We draw to ourselves everything that mirrors where we are in our consciousness. Bottom line is, like attracts like. We will draw to ourselves people that are at the same place as we are in consciousness. We will draw to ourselves things that mimic and parallel where we are in our consciousness, in our awareness. Like attracts like, birds of a feather flock together. Yeah, all that stuff is true, right? But it's true at a deeper level. It's true at a deeper level, right? When we were told birds of a feather flock together, you know, basically it was about more sectarianism, right? Or like these people in their individual little cubby holes wanting to be uniformity was how that principle was expressed, right? There's a right and there's a wrong and everybody that's right is over here. And we birds that flock together over here are going to be right. No. That is a principle too big for that little cubby hole. Plato understood that like attracts like. He was giving us a universal principle. So where we are in consciousness will attract similar people, ideas, persons, places, and things. Now that's interesting. Because some of you might be sitting here going, what in the heck's going on? You belong here, or the universe wouldn't have put you here. People who find themselves in treatment or in recovery, you belong here. You wouldn't have come here if the universe hadn't attracted you to come here. Because like attracts like. Where we are in our consciousness at some level is attracted to a like, similar stage of consciousness. Another way of phrasing that is wherever we find ourselves, we probably need to be there. We don't have to be at any place other than where we are now at this present time. If we know, if we know that the universe has a number of principles that are operative in its hardware, then we are where we need to be at this particular stage. What it might mean we have to do, however, is open our channels of reception in order to get where we are. In order to receive where we are, we have to open ourselves a little bit and sometimes stretch a little bit. But not too much. Oftentimes, just sitting, being open, honest, and willing that where we are is where the universe, okay, if you will allow me, where God has placed us. We don't have to be anywhere else. It's wonderful. See, the universal principles are very freeing. they don't take so much work in living them as it takes a lot of work in becoming aware of them. Isn't that true? Just becoming aware of them, because so much a drag exists against us so we can't see them. And only the farmer understands the beauty and the richness, you see, of what's going on. There's no duality. There's no good. There's no bad. It's all wonderful. It's people who, you know, are detached from the totality, from the natural universe, that don't understand that. Okay? So don't like fertilizer. Just like what comes after. Right? Don't like to skin the rabbit. Just eat it. And the universal principles are about both sides. It's about the whole. It is about the whole. It's about the totality. It is about opening our eyes to the totality and recognizing that each and every one of us are potential livers of these universal principles. I'd like to end on five, the number five, for some reason. So I'm going to do one more quick one. Universal principle. The law of love, of unconditional love, is always operating. It's always operating. It has operated from the beginning. So don't worry about losing love. Worry about letting go of your limited idea of it. Love is so vast. Love is so big. Love is so marvelous. None of us could ever fill it. That's how love keeps us humble. It's always larger than we are. So if you feel as though you've lost love, you've only stepped out of it. Stepped out of its circle. Stepped into the duality. Into the multiplicity of consciousness. You are just ignorant of its operating. Love is always operating. The law of love. The unconditional law of love, that is the very core law operative in the universe. It is always going on. It's been going on from the beginning of time. It is our task to align ourselves and to harmonize ourselves with the universal law of love. If we do that, then we get serenity, wisdom, and courage. What blocks us from living out the universal law of love are the multidimensional toxins of our life. Our mental toxins of denial, rationalization, minimization, arrogance, grandiosity, mental toxins, dishonesty, mental toxin, emotional toxins, anger, resentment that we hold on that become old, archaic, rage, guilt and shame, fear, that is toxic. Okay, spiritual toxic faith. Toxic faith. Infantile faith. Where we need to go beyond it into something more mature, more meaningful, more marvelous. So what happens when things get toxic, they've got to move. A child or baby would never move out of the mother's womb if it wasn't becoming toxic. And see, it's interesting. It's part of, I think, what it means to be human, that we hang around in dimensions of life and we get all toxic because we don't move on. If we understood, if we could get in touch with the wisdom of our infancy, we would know that when it is time to go, it is time to go. Or we're not going to make it. Right? That's that wonderful in the program. I love that. That hell is a place we've already been. That's a great statement that talks about not wanting to return to the toxic place. Let's move out of it into the next realm, into the next universe, which, by the way, itself will become toxic when it's no longer useful. Constantly progressing, constantly moving forward, constantly transforming, constantly becoming more and more one with the total, with the totality. Yes. What wonderful good news. Universal principles are operating. It is ours to get in touch with them.